Elizabeth, can you hear us? Can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
Okay, I've made you a co-host, but I will, you're welcome to call on people. As people join, I'll go ahead and admit them, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, am I hosting this meeting? I mean, am I leading it?
Yes.
Okay. Of course, I have like the one that's the agenda that's a mile long. Okay. All right.
I thought you volunteered for this one.
You know, I think I did, but that was 1,000 emails ago.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. So should we start?
I mean, I could do it if you want. I mean, it's not going to be pretty.
No, I'm familiar with the agenda. I can do it, Ali. I can do it. I was surprised. I mean, I've definitely prepared because I wrote my newsletter. This newsletter took forever because there were just so much stuff and it was all added late, or half of it was added late.
Yeah. So before we proceed, we were chatting before you came here, and I just wanted to mention I wanted to bring to Ali's attention at about 10:45 this morning, that all of council got an email from Dr. Abner about the ICPOC
yes.
Resolution. I would look for that. She's pretty spot on.
I responded to her actually.
Yeah, it was a thoughtful email.
Natasha.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm halfway through the email response and then this started. Okay, Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt you. So you can proceed.
All right, so we're going to start, and for anyone who is new to caucus, I see we've got, Ann's here.
Sure.
All right, let's get Ann in here. I just hit admit to her.
Yep.
Oh, goody. Okay, I just stepped away. I was looking for my papers.
No, that's all right. Okay. So for anyone who is in our caucus, who's listening in, are you going to... Kathy, are we gonna do your method of letting people join?
Given the number of people, I think we should just leave them on speaker.
Okay.
I mean, right. On phone connection.
Gotcha. No, that's fine. Okay, I just want to double check. All right. So, the way we do caucus is we go sort of one item at a time. And we're gonna exchange ideas among each other, ask questions among each other, and we're gonna, as each item wraps up, we're going to give everybody who is in attendance here by phone an opportunity to contribute to our discussion and ask questions or make comments. So I'm gonna start with the consent agenda. The consent agenda is typically voted on without discussion of each item, and so this is how we do it at caucus. We're gonna. Is anybody here tonight want to talk about an item on the consent agenda? Kathy, Ann, Jack, Ali?
No.
Nothing you want to pull? I saw some questions.
Well, just before we get there, I don't know if we can talk maybe about a couple things before we get to that. I don't know. I know, but there's some things in the introductions and maybe, you know, in the communications that may be interesting. I don't know if we
okay.
can back
that. Oh, okay.
You know,
all right. We could start with that.
The I voted sticker, you know, that was part of the art commission. I'm on the art commission. So, with the city clerk's office, they had this contest, and you know, with the art commission and local schools, they awarded a bunch of students, and that's what they'll be passing out on election day, are these stickers that were done with this contest. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the Art Commission and the city clerk's office.
Okay.
Yes, Anne here. Yes, and then we just have those two other exciting introductions, one from ICPAC, Dr. Jackson, and also Healthy Street. Those speeches coming up.
Yeah.
There's an actual presentation on Healthy Streets?
Yeah, Tom Crawford said there's a resolution on this agenda that I'm going to be co-sponsoring that came late.
How late?
It came Thursday, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that.
It's of course not of course, but been led by the DDA. They had a board meeting last week and they talked about this pilot program, and they're doing the funding, and so it's coming to council tomorrow, and they're going to give a short presentation on the program.
That's the closing the streets one. Oh, sorry, I jumped on top.
It's a little bit more extending on what we're doing now, with, you know, based on the business associations. This is beyond that. And there is some concern because I think Councilmember Lum said there were some streets there that weren't in the DDA district. So she was concerned that some of these streets are outside of the DDA area.
Right. Well, I know there's another, we had a meeting this week, those of us who, Kathy, what do you want to say?
Well, I just want to say that I was downtown with Councilmember Bannister on Friday night. Things looked really great in terms of having dining in the streets. I have grave concerns about some of the other street plans. And I would like to see a signed plan. A signed plan by a professional engineer with Vision Zero expertise. I think that's only reasonable given that we just published our 2019 crash rate, and it went from 59 crashes to 74 crashes, an increase of 15 crashes. And that was not the trend of our other peer cities. So it seems like the more money we spend on pedestrian safety and street infrastructure, the more crashes we have. So I'm very disappointed. May I also say that anyone who has called in, if you would like to join by video, please send an email to kgriswold@a2gov.org, and I will send you the link. That's a2gov.org.
All right. Ali, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to also talk about, you know, Dick Pock will be there tomorrow to discuss, you know, the current situation in our country and our community, the role that they see themselves in, and I look forward to hearing what they have to say. There are a couple resolutions on this week's agenda, one brought by Councilmember Nelson, and the other one being brought forth by the mayor and Councilmember Grand and Ackerman. So both of these resolutions have not been looked at by ICPAC or brought forth. I feel comfortable talking about them when we get them on that part of the agenda, but I'm looking forward to tomorrow's presentation by ICPAC.
All right, so I'm gonna ask if any of our callers are interested in talking about an item on the consent agenda, because otherwise we will move on from
I want to talk about a couple things on the consent agenda. I'm sorry if we could.
Sure. Oh, okay. All right. Sure. Okay.
But I'll let the callers go first.
We can talk about the consent agenda first, and then if the callers have anything. So, well, Ollie, what do you?
A couple things, like, you know, we got, you know, a temporary, you know, CA-10. We got CA-10 and CA-2 perhaps. We can talk a little bit about, you know, CA-5 will probably draw some interest from Councilmember Hainer, but you know, I'm not going to pull it out tonight. But CA-2 and maybe CA-10, you know, we can talk about a lot of these things, and I'm sure many will be brought out tomorrow.
So I want to point out with CA-2 that I did ask an agenda question regarding the providers. Under the contract, whether they have to abide by our non-discrimination ordinance and our equity considerations. And because the main contract is actually with the county, OCED, they have to comply with their living wage, equal employment, and equal access sections of their policies. And so there have been some public concerns raised about whether or not some of the providers discriminate against gays or, other protected groups. And I think that that's a legitimate concern. That's why I asked that question. I believe that we've received assurances that they have to agree to the non-discrimination and equal access policies of the county.
What was your question about CA2, Ali? What were you thinking about?
I just wanted to draw attention to it. I appreciate Councilmember Eaton's question. I think it's important that we look at those factors when we're awarding money. It's good to have Councilmember Eaton around. I mean, last week we had a budget and labor committee meeting. And anytime I'm in one of those meetings, it's always good to have someone with his background and his demeanor to get through those things. With this, it's just, pointing out, a substantial amount of money that's being given to those who are in need. And this council has been criticized in the past recently for trying to defund nonprofits and defund programs to help those in need. And I think it's important anytime we do hand out $1.5 million or $1.3 million that we draw a little bit of attention to that fact that we do provide a lot of money, and we are, as a community, as taxpayers, generous, especially when you compare us to our neighbors. And it's something that I don't think goes noticed enough.
Along that line, yes, I'm on the Housing and Human Services Advisory Board, and so we see the COFU coordinated funding presentation, CA1 and CA2. We see those in committee when we meet month to month on Thursday nights. And I think there is a need for these monies to be accessible in fairly real time on a dashboard for the public. And now the county does have dashboards, but I think the city similarly needs dashboards, because in addition to this $1.3 million, there was that other memo we got last week about $500,000 of money going to Miller Manor and Baker Commons and Shelter. And so I just, to build on what Ali was saying, I think I'm urging that these numbers be on a web page of the city's website so that we can all clearly reference them 24 hours a day to see how our human services contributions are growing.
Yeah, it's sort of a chronic problem, the way information is, twisted, I guess. Hey, Jane, you've got your hand up and I don't see you. Oh, there you are. Okay. What did you want to say? You're muted right now. Oh, there you go. Now you're good.
Just on CA2, and I submitted some questions about this. I would just note that, I am concerned that that our funding partners, specifically the United Way Board, did vote to reduce their funding commitments. They're going to be funding at an 80% level for 6 months, and after 6 months, they're going to revisit their donations and determine what commitment they can provide for the next 6 months of the fiscal year. And similarly, St. Joe's has committed to a reduction in funding of 50% for the entire 12 months. So that's significant. And it's, it could potentially obviously impact what we need to do down the road. We rely on each other, obviously. So that is a concern. And obviously their ability to fund relates to COVID. But it's just something for us to not lose sight of going forward, I think. And I will just say, and our funding is always, these are the general fund allocations. But, in addition to this, we have block grant allocations. and 100% of our block grant allocations, which is really unusual for, we are unique in this regard. I'm not saying it's bad, I'm just pointing out that we are unique. 100% of our block grant dollars go to housing and human service needs. So that's also another significant contribution that we make.
And that block grant is represented in this the cover memo as the CDBG money.
Right.
Okay, so that's about $318,000.
Yeah.
In addition to the $1.3 million and the $500,000?
Yep.
Yeah, the $1.3 is general fund.
Yep. So just counting dollars, it looks like the reductions from the United Way and from St. Joe is about $350,000 less than they had originally planned to spend on that. That's a significant shortfall, I think.
Yes.
And I'm just calling for all of these dollars not to be in silos lost in cyberspace, but to be up on a web page.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that we're in a position where we can augment funding to try to make up for some of these other shortfalls? I realize that we are also short of money, but I think this is actually what we've been talking about, is that the human services needs are going to increase at the same time that our revenues are dramatically declining. And this is the first example that we've run into it on that.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna ask. So, have any other items from the consent agenda?
Yeah, I was gonna talk about briefly. Not that I have a whole lot to say on it right now. CA-10, also kind of CA-12, where it talks about a recycling and trash program that we've neglected. We've had a lot happening the last several months as a city, as an organization, and as a community. And here we're facing, you know, a result of that inaction or change in action. And we're bringing back a former city employee to help keep the system operating, and an additional funding and going back into our reserves, cash reserves, to help pay for services that we're providing. So, you know, we have a broken solid waste system still that I think we, with everything that's been going on, haven't had the time or failed to look at recently.
So, although the agenda response memo says that staff hasn't gotten any feedback on these issues, I will point out that I and some members of the community met with staff and talked about the fact that the idea of bidding this work out by type of customer rather than type of material collected it seems conceptually wrong. You know, what this does is, if all residential collection is bundled into one contract, it favors large national corporations who have little or no commitment to meaningful recycling. And so, but if you break out these contracts by the kind of collection, so composting, recycling, and trash being separate contracts, then people who are experts in each one of those areas can better identify how they'll do it and how much it'll cost. And I think that we're better served contracting by type of material rather than type of customer. And I've had that conversation, although it doesn't come through in the responses to the agenda questions.
Hey, Jane, what do you want to know? What do you want to say?
Just in general on this, in terms of consolidating the collection contracts and for the consolidation for residential and multifamily, it was projected. I will say that the A20 plan assumed that all of the savings for the consolidation, that all of the savings would be utilized for sustainability, climate action purposes. And but we did not adopt the plan that reflected this consolidation. So, and the estimated savings were about $2 million a year. And for the city, the consolidation was assumed to go, that the services would be provided by the city, not some other private contractor. I just want to note that.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move off of the consent agenda. I'm going to move us forward. Oh, you want to say something? All right. I got an audience member, Pat Lasko.
Okay.
Tell us what you have to say.
I had a comment.
All right. Good to see you all. Thanks for doing caucus. It's really nice to be able to give you this feedback face to face. So on CA2, in the list of entities to which these funds will be given is the Salvation Army. I think it's $89,000 is earmarked for the Salvation Army, which is an entity that actively discriminates against gays and lesbians. So I'm not quite sure how either the county or the city, both of which have anti-discrimination ordinances, are giving money to the Salvation Army. That's one. Number two was the, I think Jack's idea of recycling, looking at the recycling by what's recycled. I guess I would take that three steps back and go, how much of our recycling is actually being recycled? Does anyone know what percentage of our recycling is being recycled? So you're giving more money to recycle Ann Arbor for curbside. How much of that is ending up somewhere in landfills? And if you can't answer that question, I have, as a taxpayer, I have a fundamental problem at you throwing money at recycling before you know whether our glass ends up, is our glass still being landfilled, crushed in landfill, when those bales go out, right, from wherever they're being trucked to, are they being landfilled?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that Recycle Ann Arbor has ever answered that question. I mean, I certainly have asked Councilmember Hainer. And certainly I've heard Councilmember Romlowry bring this up in public, but for me, before I want to see you throwing more tax dollars at any entity for any recycling program, I think you have to answer the question of how much of our recycling is being recycled. This Office of Sustainability sent me something that claims, you know, a huge percentage of our recycling is being diverted from the landfill. And Councilmember Hainer received data from city staff that contradicted that, that showed an enormous amount of our recycling is being landfilled, is not being diverted from the landfill. So we have to, I would urge you, I would beg you to please get an answer to that question before you give more money to any recycling program. And, you know, I've heard Councilmember Romlowry consistently, you know, talk about the need to get this program back up and running. I totally agree.
Well, I mean, I agree with you, yeah. Pat. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can jump in, but
yeah, go ahead.
To respond, it's one of these things that where constituents and community members will say, this is a value that we have as a community, and we're willing to pay more, and we're willing to spend all this money on a program that is fraught with issues. Personally, if you know, I was king, I would have just taken all our recyclables and thrown them in the landfill the last 5 years and put that money towards other programs, because, and that'll get me tarred and feathered. But to be honest with you, how much money are we spending? We could add $50-60 million towards something. You could have cleaned up the plume. Who knows? So I'm just throwing this out there that it is really frustrating, this recycling and the amount of money and what gets recycled. And I know Councilmember Lum's got her hand up.
Look, it's horrifying, but there are cities that are discontinuing their recycling programs for just the reason that Councilmember Romlowry said.
All right, Jane, I see your hand up, and I just want to make a comment that we have a hand up from a caller, and we are still on the consent agenda, and there's like a huge agenda. So I'm just throwing that out there. Jane.
Real quick, I think most communities are, it's a national problem, have discontinued their recycling programs because it is costlier to process than the secondary markets, with, you know, China's no longer taking our recyclables, you know, there's a lot of background on this, but for all these reasons, you know, the China market no longer accepting recyclables from this country, the increased requirements in terms of the quality of the recyclables, the fact that the secondary markets, you know, have not held up, has made the processing part of recycling more costly than what we get on the revenue side when we, you know, sell these recyclables. And in all the questions that have been submitted about where these recyclables are being taken and processed, we have been consistently told that the recyclables are in fact being recycled. You know, we're transferring them and shipping them to various places, but you know, we are assured that they are being actually recycled, not landfilled.
Okay.
If I can really quickly. When the company that was running the MRF, that broke the MRF, gave up that service, Waste Management came in and they began shipping all of our materials to Cincinnati. And immediately we stopped using glass for landfill sand because they had a market for recyclable glass, excuse me. We've been informed that the materials that go to Cincinnati, only 11% of that is landfilled. I don't know if you trust the contractor that we have. That's what they're telling us. It's my understanding that they've backed that up. In the meantime, that service has been taken over by Recycle Ann Arbor, and they report very similar numbers. And we're still in negotiations to get our MRF back online, but they believe that they have the end product merchants who want to buy our materials. There is a new plant opening up in Southeast Michigan to manufacture boxes, to take your Amazon box and recycle it for reuse, because there's just so much demand for that kind of cardboard. So if a company has customers to buy those materials, we can do it. I'm not sure that everybody in the country has customers who will buy their materials, but at this point in time, it's my understanding that we do.
All right, I'm going to unmute a caller. If your number ends in 556, I'm hoping you have something to say about our consent agenda, because that is what the part of the agenda we're on. So I'm going to unmute you now. Hello?
Hi, this is Ralph. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, this is Ralph McKee. I just have a quick question on, maybe a quick question on either 20 or 22, the budget amendments.
Okay.
There's a number for safety services, $240,000, and it just says contractual obligations, unplanned non-retirement severances. Do you have any further detail on what that is?
This, you're talking about a consent agenda, CA-20, CA?
Yes. It's the budget amendments.
Okay.
And there's a number within that, the $1,218,000. There's a number of $240,000 for safety services, police, contractual obligations, and unplanned non-retirement severances. That's a pretty that vague. I don't want to use the word vague, but what is that? Do you have any further detail?
Jack, do you know maybe?
It's a pretty large number.
20 and 22, you said?
I can't remember. I'm looking at the it's the budget amendments. I can't remember the number. I'm looking at the actual budget amendment. I can't look at my screen. And
oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
One.
Sorry. Okay.
CA-22.
Okay. Because, I only see the one budget amendment, the CA-22.
Yeah,
are there
okay.
multiple well, amendments
there.
In that? Okay.
There are a list of.
It's about deferred compensation.
Yeah, so it's 22. It looks at, it has a list of items, and one of the items is safety services, police, contractual obligations and unplanned non-retirement severances, $240,000.
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Do you have any further detail of what that is?
It might have been the money that was owed to Chief Honest on his retirement.
Hmm?
Why would that have been happening now, though?
Because that's when it was actualized.
Amy has her hand up.
Oh, sorry. Anne? Or, I mean, Jane. Sorry.
Thanks. So it's CA-20 you're asking about?
Yeah.
No,
22. Okay. 22, yeah.
22.
Oh, I thought it was 20 that you... So
22 is the budget amendment.
I'm sorry. So, we've got a couple of these. First 20, did you ask about that, Ralph? I'm sorry.
22.
It's 22. The million 218.
Okay. All that 22, I see no issues there. It's not doing anything other than just making sure the city's compliant with state law. So it's not spending any money or adjusting the fiscal year 21 budget.
So it's just a list of things that were already planned to spend that money is being moved because of the requirement to be balanced.
Yeah, it's not spending any money.
Right, that's fine.
It's just adjusting it. Yeah, the budget.
Okay, that's fine. I just I was curious what that item was. That's all.
Okay.
Good question.
All right. Are we good,
well,
Ralph?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to mute you again. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anne, did you want to say something?
Just briefly, wanted to highlight CA-7 about the special assessment districts. And that is just, I think we can say yes to that CA-7 because there's still emails flying back and forth between legal and staff and some council members about all of the sidewalk resolutions and how we can get all of them cleared up before the meeting starts tomorrow night so that it won't be taking up meeting time tomorrow. So the CA-7 about special assessment districts is just a suggestion that had come from Tom Crawford about deferring the first payment without interest until a year from this July and then interest starting. So I'm thinking that until the new sidewalk millage is voted on in November, that this CA-7 installment payments is helpful to say yes to in the meantime.
Okay. Yeah, I think that Jane asked a question on the agenda about that. All right, so I'm gonna have us move on. I'm looking at my screen and I accidentally lost the agenda for a moment. I'm getting back to it. So the first thing on the main agenda, now that we are off of the consent agenda, we have a public hearing on, I'm still scrolling through.
Jackson
Road. Okay, so.
Perhaps we could discuss the public hearing matters as they occur actually in the rest of the agenda so that we don't talk about it twice.
Okay.
And
all right.
I just like to say that people will be given 3 minutes and when you have 30 seconds left, I will remind you.
That's very helpful, Kathy, because this is going to be hard for us to get through this agenda. All right. So the first C1, an ordinance to amend chapter 55. This is a rezoning of a parcel that was PUD, and we're going to be rezoning it to C3 fringe commercial district. It's on Plymouth Road. The map made it explained that it had already partially been rezoned to accommodate a plum market. This is in whose ward? Jane, is this your ward? Kathy, do you guys want to talk about it?
Sure.
Thank you.
It's the first reading. Rezones from PUD to C3, which is fringe commercial. The site currently has two pairs of two-story Red Roof Inn motel buildings. and a closed Big Boy restaurant. And so the plan is to demolish the Eastern Pier of Motels and construct a six-story, 76,200 square foot, 127-room Hampton Inn, and remodel the restaurant into a Panera Bread with a drive-thru. And there are some planned project modifications to increase the height, expand the front setback. There are on this site 9 landmark trees. 4 are proposed to be removed. Replacements would be planted. Obviously, they wouldn't then be landmarks. And the Red Roof Inn now is being used for as an expanded shelter. 50 rooms in the eastern building are being used. The western buildings was indicated in a May 12th memo from Mr. Leonard, could house another 50. And the current planning is to have us use the hotel through the summer, at least, is what was stated as a shelter.
And then it would be torn down for the Hampton Inn?
No, those buildings are not to be torn down because there's a couple pairs of, you know, two-story Red Roof Inn buildings.
That will stay.
Right.
Because
I want to thank Jane for the excellent questions on this. I wonder about the use of C3 zoning in this project, because first, it doesn't fit. So it's going to require us to approve this as a planned project. And I hate planned projects because it's a deviation from our zoning that if we're going to deviate that much, we should probably use a PUD. If we used a PUD, we would be able to expect some affordable housing funding to flow from the project. Instead, they're going to get a 50% increase in height and not really contribute much other than a big building. And so, again, I appreciate Jane's questions on this, and I'm pretty skeptical of using the C3 zoning for this particular project.
Thanks to you both. I'm also concerned about the 9 landmark trees removed. I know the Natural Features Committee will be very sad about that.
All right. I see you, Tom. I'm gonna unmute Tom. Okay. Oh, you're helping Kathy?
No, right. I think he did it himself.
How did you do that yourself? Yep. You're not supposed to be able to do that. All right. Okay, Tom, what do you want to say about this?
So you can hear me then?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Thank you. I agree with Councilmember Eaton that the rezoning is entirely inappropriate here. It's currently zoned PUD. And the very first question that you have to answer on a rezoning application is, why is the rezoning necessary? So you could rezone a PUD to a different PUD. Rezoning something to C3 and saying C3 is appropriate, yet you need massive variance to that C3, by definition says that C3 is not the appropriate zoning category. And the big difference is, and I'd like to see staff answer this directly, what would be the community benefit if this exact plan was approved as a PUD instead of rezoning it away from PUD to C3 with a planned project modification? Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. All right. Well,
That's great. I would like to ask her agenda question.
Yeah, I would like to.
I asked in my agenda question about this.
I was going to point that out as well. So thank you.
Well, one thing that I noticed was that the previous PUD was really old. Like, it was last updated in 1986, I think. So, but I did think it was interesting. I forget who asked the question, whether it was Jack or Jane, about whether this as a transit oriented, if it enacted the transit oriented development,
yeah.
Would this comply with that? And it wouldn't comply with that because it wouldn't be mixed.
I asked about that.
Yeah, so I don't totally understand. We seem to be at cross purposes. I don't see any other hands up. So I'm gonna move us forward to C2. which is an ordinance to amend section 1209 of boards and commissions. And this is, oh, this is about the housing commission, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the, this is about changing the policies for how the housing commission can enter into contracts. Is that right?
Yes, this yep. is a good one to lay the groundwork for future things coming up in July.
Right.
There's been a lot of emails between city attorney and Councilmember Bannister and Lum on this. I thought that was what was coming on that matter was first reading. This is second reading on that?
No, this is first reading.
We got this
Friday night.
Yeah.
And, right.
Okay, I'm misreading
this. Which is problematic.
There's nothing under second reading. I'm sorry. I thought this was under second reading already.
No, this is first.
No, we're still on C2.
Okay.
C2.
So this is first reading.
It's to allow. I'm sorry. I'm just speaking. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, yeah.
It's to allow the Housing Commission to execute purchase agreements and have the property deeded to them directly. Historically, the cities had to purchase the property and then convey it to the Housing Commission.
Okay. All right. Does anybody who is in attendance at this meeting have a comment about that particular item on our agenda? All right, I don't see any hands up, so we're going to move on to DS1. This is the subject of our public hearing. So this is the Jackson Avenue Sidewalk Gap Project Special Assessment District. So this is Ward 5. So Ali, do you have any comments about it?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a couple callers, perhaps. I told them I invited them to caucus to give their case, their story on this. We had a Zoom meeting with many of the residents. Councilmember Bannister was there, hearing from the residents. We heard from them earlier this spring when many weren't even notified of this because of mailings and notifications going to addresses that people weren't getting their mail at. And so we postpone this so we can have proper noticing and more feedback from the residents. And it's an issue that one that's got a lot of issues to it. And I would rather just reserve my time now for the residents to speak on it, and then I can follow up later.
All right, I'm going to start with Joe Lynn. I'm going to unmute you. You might have to unmute yourself. There you go. All right.
All right. I'm here speaking, representing one of the residents, as well as residents on Nixon Road, Traver Road project, and Martin Road. We've all grouped together and are supporting each other as the current process for these sidewalk projects and the related special assessments. There's a lot of objections to the way the process has occurred. And I think right now with the millage that's on the ballot, it's prudent for the city council to consider pushing these items for consideration after the millage has passed. I think if we could take these unnecessary burdens off of these homeowners, there will be a little bit more opportunity for the homeowners to really collaborate with the city council to make these projects actually successful. But right now, as it is, it's actually putting a hardship on many of these homeowners. With many, I know that on Jackson Road, there are many that are very concerned about potentially losing their home because they just can't afford these special assessments. There are also concerns around, the way the design of the sidewalks, if it's really going to achieve the safety objective that these sidewalk gap projects are trying to achieve. So I know that in one case that I heard, there's a property where there is no resident, a home built on it, and you know the assessment is $50,000, which just seems to be a very unreasonable amount to be applied. So I'll yield the time back.
All right, thank you. And you know what, it occurs to me also that we're, on a previous item on the agenda, we were actually delaying for a year. I forget which item on the consent agenda, delaying assessments. All right, I see a hand up from the number ending in 100. I'm gonna unmute you. Hello? We can hear you. If your number ends in 100, we can hear you, and we're ready to hear what you have to say. Hello? I don't know what to do, Ollie. Do you know who that is likely to be?
No, I don't, but I can just fill in the gaps a little bit as much as I can. You know, during the Zoom meeting on Thursday, and perhaps take that call when it's better, but, you know, the residents were complaining that there was high assessments, you know, cost of about $150 a linear foot. The fact that there isn't, I'm aware of, any kind of, you know, sewer line that's going in or any other kind of capital improvement project that's occurring right now that would make sense more so to have this sidewalk put in at the same time. You have folks that have extremely high assessments. Like as the one caller just said, there's one property owner that's going to be assessed $50,000 and who doesn't even live there. The issue with snow and ice removal, the responsibility of doing that, the hardship that's going to create. Many homes in this area are actually were built by programs, for the low income.
Habitat for Humanity.
Thank you, Ann. Habitat for Humanity. There was four or five homes in the area that built by Habitat for Humanity. So many of these folks are low in working class on the lower end of the economic ability to pay back these high assessments. You know, and then you know there are folks that said that you know of the fairness issue that is sometimes brought up, that you know, how can we fix a broken system if we say we've always had people pay this way and so we have to continue doing it this way? And if we're going to acknowledge that the system is broken and needs addressing, we can no longer keep applying yesterday's standards to today and tomorrow's problems. So I thought that was a really strong argument against the fairness aspects of historically assessing homeowners the way we have. So, you know, people are calling on for this millage to maybe take the financial burden off the individual homeowner, because this is for the greater good, but it's being placed on the backs of few. So, you know, it's many of the same arguments we've heard before on other projects, but in this case, it's even complicated more because of the higher than average assessment costs and the fact that this sidewalk really is being put in without other major work being done. And I could be wrong in that, but it's not my knowledge that there's other significant work that's being done in conjunction with these sidewalk installations.
Jane, what did you want to say?
I would just say, in terms of the higher than average, these sidewalk projects are being leveraged in the case of, you know, the costs are significant, but there is leverage here, and most sidewalk gap projects don't provide this kind of leverage, frankly, historically. And the funding for the Jackson Avenue sidewalk gap, about half is being paid by the city. And again, I'm not saying that these aren't significant, but it's just, you know, that. It's not, accurate to say that these are higher than normal because we are leveraging the residential cost. And that is, we do that less frequently historically. But there is this leverage.
Can you explain, I'm sorry, I apologize. Can you explain how we're leveraging and what terms of leverage?
Right, on this, 123 of the 234,000 is being paid by the city.
Well, the city owns over 50% of the lineage in that area.
Right, 8,000 is not accessible, and the city's assessment for parks is 115,000.
So, but that's not using like funding from grants and other sources to leverage with. We're just paying our fair share.
Well, 8,000 is not accessible.
Yeah.
Right. City- I want to try one more time to get the number that ends in 100. We just got a lot of static the last time I unmuted them, but I want to just give them one more chance if we can get the sound right. If your number ends in 100,
hi, yes, this is Lou Fu. Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. I'm glad I tried again. All right.
Sorry, I didn't know my number ended in 100.
Oh, that's like, funny. Oh.
Anyway, thank you very much. My name is Lu Fu Ma, and I'm actually speaking on behalf of my parents, Wei Yi and Jing Hong Ma, who own the property 3365 Jackson Road. This is the property where there is currently no home. And then, so I actually just wanted to talk about why the city wants to put sidewalks in. And I believe the city wants to put sidewalks in for public benefit, to allow people to walk to different parts of at the city. So currently, this sidewalk on the west side takes you to the Chevy dealership on the corner of Jackson and Wagner. So that brings you into Sayo Township. But ideally, this sidewalk should take you to the Dolph Park entrance, which is on Wagner Road. There is no sidewalk on Wagner Road. Also, if you want to get to Dolph Park, there is no sidewalk on Park Lake. So it's kind of like, this is almost a sidewalk to nowhere. And actually, you know, how many people will actually be walking on this sidewalk if you can't get to the parks? The other thing I wanted to say is about the assessment. So my parents have told me that the current property tax assessment per year is $6,532. Adding this new special assessment for this sidewalk that does not benefit my parents because there's no home on it, of $4,618 is basically a 41% increase in their taxes. That is phenomenal. And what benefit does it give them for that? And so the other thing is, obviously, the city has a snow removal ordinance where it requires the snow to be removed when it's over 1 inch. The problem is my parents live in California. They would have to hire that out. That would also be very expensive, and there is no one basically to tell them if the contractor that they hired actually did shovel. I guess it would be really good that if you do want this sidewalk on Jackson, and if it's for the general public, that this be reserved for discussion at the November millage. So thank you very much for letting me speak.
Thank you for joining our meeting. All right. I'm going to, I see a caller with their hand raised. If your number ends in 978, I'm going to unmute you. So we're ready to hear what you have to say.
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, this is Ching Chi Chen, living at 2725 Nixon Road. So I also hope to speak on this PS1.
Okay.
First, I don't even live in Jackson Road, but since I do not agree with the way to impose substantial special assessment on adjacent property owners like me on Nixon Road, So I hope to speak up also. And I appreciate that the council let me speak up tonight. And 2 weeks ago, everybody mentioned that the council passed this R-20-189 enactment. So, and then Ali councilman also mentioned that, we recognize that this taxation mechanism is not perfect, and we try to fix it. And so if the council body recognize that it is not convincing, please help us to fix it. And then act properly, including on project not yet materialized. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your feedback. All right. Okay. All right. I'm going to move us forward then. I don't see any other hands. The next item is, I'm scrolling again. Let's see.
Elizabeth, while you're bringing up the next item, I just want to say again that there's several little sidewalk bits and pieces on the agenda. And,
yes, there are.
And I have just before this meeting started sent another email that because of the Open Meetings Act, I can only copy Ollie, Jeff, I forget who, maybe Jane, and Kathy, because I figured I'd see you all tonight. Anyway, it's the Open Meeting Act. I couldn't communicate, but I have asked, the legal department is working to these issues of bringing back Nixon and Traver and trying to consolidate all three projects. I want to manage expectations with the residents that I don't know how it's going to work out or how council members are going to vote, but there's a lot of moving levers Monday night about these different sidewalks. And to me, the simple goal is to take all three projects, include them together, and wait till after the November new sidewalk millage vote.
Can I ask, well, I guess we're going to get to that. I think we're going to get to that. I have a question about that, but I'm going to move us through the new business because we've got 17 items in the DC section. So DC one is declaring June Pride Month, which this resolution has full of some really wonderful facts about representation of gay and lesbian in our elected office in Washtenaw County, historic firsts and current people in office, and also urging expansion of the Elliot Larson Act to protect LGBTQ. Does anybody have any comments about this? If this is going to prove like unanimously because it's wonderful. Anybody in our audience want to comment on this?
Well, before you move on.
What? Okay.
As I recall, last year when we declared June,
Oh, wait, you're muted, Jack. You accidentally muted yourself.
I do that. You did something to get the pride flag flying out in front of City Council or City Hall.
I did. And my husband, it was a fun little story, actually. I was at Treasure Mart because I like to bounce around Treasure Mart. And I was there in June last year, and one of the owners, staff people, somebody there I was talking to, and I said, I introduced myself and I explained that I was coming to City Hall, and he said, I have something to say to you. Why is the flag not flying? And I went to our staff and I said, like, somebody asked me about this. And, you know, within a day, there was a flag up there. So I have not been to City Hall this month. I don't know if the flag is up this month right now, but it should be. It was last year. So that was a lovely thing that happened last year. And now I see, we have a caller ending in 677. I'm going to unmute you so that you can share what you have to say with us.
You are unmuted.
Oh, that's a good idea.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
You are muted.
Okay.
And I believe the Pride Fest is going to be like August 2nd, the weekend before the election on August 4.
Okay. All right. The next item is DC2. I wish Jeff Hayner was here to talk about this because he brought this resolution to override the mayor's partial veto. This is the situation where we, council, tried to lift the restrictions related to funds that actually are supposed to enter our budget as unrestricted general fund dollars. And at our budget meeting, we wanted to lift that restriction and selectively guarantee funds for this year. And so there were two parts of the resolution. Mayor Taylor vetoed the part that lifted the restrictions on those dollars from the rebate. Does anybody have any comments about this item on the agenda?
Well, I mean, it's a valiant effort, you know, and I would have brought it last council meeting, but I know we're not going to have the 8 votes, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
These are general fund dollars. I've asked both city administrators that I've worked with, and that's what they call them, but we'll play along like it's something different for now.
Yep. Does anybody among our callers want to make a remark about this particular item on the agenda? All right, Anne, what did you want to say?
Well, my understanding, and maybe Jane or Jack can weigh in, it was that this was the mayor's vetoing it was mainly for dramatic effect, that it actually has no effect on the amount of money that we will be spending on climate action, pedestrian safety, and affordable housing. We're actually spending more than the millage money.
Well, I mean, that was definitely true last year. Last year, he explicitly stated that his veto had no impact because we sort of went through this routine last year. At any rate, Jane, I saw your fingers up. I really wanted to call on your cat, though. One of these times you have to raise your hand when your cat's walking by. Jane, did you want to say something?
Sorry about that.
No, I like it when I see your cat.
Oh, I have no control. Sorry. no control over her. I put her down a couple times. She pops right back up. Sorry. On this, yeah, there are not 8 votes, and we know that. But the veto, I do think, with all due respect, I do think it was a bit more than political, too, because I think that the mayor believes that a council resolution pledge, sorry, it's our cat. A council resolution was a pledge, and you've heard me opine about that. This was completely outside the budget process, and this money is general fund money, and it's undesignated general fund money. But this resolution said, here's how we're going to spend it for the full 8 years of the millage, which is highly unusual. And I think what the mayor primarily wants to see happen clearly is that this money is spent in that 40-40-20 fashion for the duration of the millage. And what we tried to do was to allocate the money as we did with the resolution that we approved for this year, and maintain the flexibility for future years. This resolution, the veto undid that. And, but I, you know, truly there, we, I think we all know there, we don't have 8 votes to override the veto. And perhaps this is something to look at down the road as a rule that, you know, we might want to change through a ballot referendum question. So that, maybe it shouldn't require 8 votes of council to override a mayoral veto. That's for another day.
All right. I don't see any other hands up. Oh, Anne, what do you want to say?
Jane, if you have time tomorrow night, it might be good to re-explain to everyone how that works, that we didn't need the whole veto was to build on a vision of the mayor's that doesn't actually have any relevance to the budget or the way the monies are going. I think that's a useful message for people to understand, and I think you explain it very well.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move on then to DC 4. No, wait, that's not right. Sorry. DC 3. Oh, DC 3. Okay. So this is my resolution. Well, I brought it, but the Councilmember Lum and Councilmember Ramlawi are co-sponsoring it with me. I started talking last week with members of ICPOC and our city attorneys about access to LEAN, this law enforcement information network. Ali, you mentioned at the beginning of the meeting that this is one of two items that could theoretically have originated with ICPOC and isn't. And it's true, this could have originated with ICPOC, but it's actually a topic of discussion that I felt confident had already been, like a support had already been expressed for it on ICPOC, so I didn't feel like it was terribly controversial. And really, it's one of these public statements where we're asking people above our pay grade, we're asking state lawmakers to change a policy to be supportive of our ICPOC. Right now, this law enforcement information network is a database that is only accessible to law enforcement agencies. So if you do not qualify as a law enforcement agency, you do not have access to it. However, the state has expanded the definition of a law enforcement agency to include, I have them named in the resolution. I had to look at, to scroll through state policy listings to find these exceptions that they periodically craft. My argument is that if a municipality has established a police oversight commission similar to ours, they should qualify as a law enforcement agency. Our laws around accountability for police and review of police incidents should qualify, basically. And they're like, this is regulated at the state level. I worked with Ariana Slay as well. She was very, very helpful in tweaking my first draft. And she pointed out to me that the state works with federal agencies as well. So what we are communicating to legislators at the state level is, our ICPOC wants access to LEAN. You should craft your policies so that there's an exception for ICPOC or for oversight commissions like ours. And please do what you have to do to coordinate with the federal agencies to make this happen for us. And so I'm hoping, and Ariana Slay was very supportive. She said, I hope it's unanimously supported by council. I hope we can unanimously support this. And we're basically just putting pressure on the state to help our ICPOC have more access to information, because like that information is power. Like right now they can only get information from LEAN through city staff, and it's heavily redacted. And I'm told that there were hiccups early on in terms of the kinds of materials they were getting, how they were redacted. It would just be more sensible for a member of ICPOC to qualify for access to LEAN so that they can get this information. And Jane and Ali, I invite you to share any comments, because obviously you are on ICPOC and you're in those meetings. I was aware of this as an benefit.
You brought this up to us a little earlier than the other resolution that's been placed on this agenda. This resolution only has a couple of resolve clauses that, you know, came up early to the commission as a part of our discussion. We were stymied early on with access to information. We couldn't get it in a reasonable amount of time early on because of some staffing issues and organizational issues. But then, once we did, there was still a firewall on what can be seen and accessed. And this, what you have addressed in this resolution, is exactly why. And so, you know, when you brought it forth, you know, we of course have already experienced the frustration, and the commission would be in full support of this. And, you know, I apologize. I don't think I stated my concerns early on. I did not have any concerns that this didn't originate with ICPOC.
Okay.
Very much well could have. I wouldn't want to, filter or keep any, good ideas from coming. So wherever they come from, if they're a good idea and something I can support, I'll be behind them. You know, it's my issue is with the other resolution that was brought forth, and we can talk about that at that point. But I appreciate you bringing this forward and discussions that we'll have on it, and perhaps ICPOC will briefly touch about it. But I'm pretty confident that they would have no problem supporting it themselves.
All right. Do we have any other comments? I don't see any hands up among audience members either. Okay, good. All right. I'm going to move us on to DC4. This is a resolution to authorize the administrator to provide notice that the city will not execute rights of first refusal for covenant restricted housing units at Stone School Townhomes and Ashley Mews. So this is for income restricted units, like condominiums, I guess, at Stone School Townhomes and Ashley Mews, where in order for an owner to sell them, they're supposed to offer first refusal to the city, and it creates a 60-day delay. And I guess it was explained in our packet that there is a private owner of one of these units that is, I guess, in need of selling it faster than 60 days. And the unit will remain income restricted. So this is not a loss of affordable housing units. It's just a matter of letting it transfer, because the city really doesn't have a great interest in owning these. That's my understanding of it. And the other part of the resolution that I read was that we passed this resolution, and it still wouldn't prevent it. It wouldn't prevent the city administrator from coming to us later and saying, oh, wait, here's this one that's for sale. Maybe you want to intervene. And Jane, do you have a different understanding of this resolution?
No. And we are seeing this. You touched on this. I mean, it's being triggered by a specific case.
Right.
Where a current owner wants to sell their unit. They don't want to have to wait for the expiration of the 60 days. And it's definitely not related to any specific property that the city might purchase. I think it makes sense. And I remember when Ashley Mews was built, and it was the units there, the affordable units there were, we had a joint agreement with the Washtenaw, no longer exists, affordable housing, whatever. It was a housing nonprofit. And, but it, as you said, they will remain covenant restricted.
Right. Do we? I called on you without you even putting your hand up, Jane, because I always know more history than anyone. So I also know you read the council packet.
Actually, these units were always. It was then later. When we set aside these units in Ashley Mews, because of things like condominium association fees and other costs, turned out they weren't all that affordable, frankly, for folks. So it was quite challenging. But nonetheless, they will remain covenant restricted, these units.
Okay. As well as what?
It was well intended.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Does anybody else have a comment about this, or can we move on? I don't see any hands up from callers. All right. I'm going to move on to DC5. Which is a resolution to support Washtenaw County and Shelter Association. This is a budget amendment for $250,000. They are still trying to cover expenses from March and April. And actually, I have to flip to my newsletter, because that's my best resource here. It's a three-party agreement with the Shelter Association of Washtenaw County and Washtenaw County Office of OCD.
These are costs from March to April and future costs beginning in May, which may or may not be reimbursable through FEMA. And so it sounds like we're basically like fronting them money and hopefully we'll get it back. Jane, yeah.
I just want to know, this is not a new $250,000.
It's not?
No, it is not.
I was going to ask, didn't we just approve that?
Yeah, it's revising the language of the previous $250,000 that we approved on May 4th. And it makes it just simply clarifies that the Shelter Association can use the city funds even if FEMA is ultimately determines that they aren't eligible for reimbursement. But it's not enough. $250,000.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, that's good to know because it was just a month ago or so that we passed this the last.
Before.
Yeah. Thanks,
yeah.
Jane.
I did not read it that way. That's very helpful, Jane.
This looks like deja vu.
Yeah, I was like, how many times? How many times is it $250,000?
Well, in the meantime, the clock is ticking on our trying to come up with those savings that we need to find for this year. We don't have a whole lot of time to do that. So, right.
Okay.
This is not new.
All right. Does anybody have a comment on this item? I'm looking at my phone calls and any hands up. I don't see any. Okay.
This is going to be $125,000 a month, every month that we have it up on a dashboard where we can add it all up and track it.
Right. Okay. I'm going to say DC 6 is next. This is a resolution to further approve outdoor sales, service, and consumption of alcoholic beverages during the COVID-19 pandemic. This is Ali and Jane and the mayor. So either of you want to talk about it?
This is just cleaning up a technicality.
Yeah.
That last list of establishments that we approved to do this omitted Necto. Because at that time they had their liquor license in escrow.
Right.
So okay.
On the list of businesses. So this is just to include them back on that list that Councilmember Hainer referred to at that council meeting. So this is just identifying them as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the list was totally fine before. It just didn't have Necto. And as Councilman Ramlow, we just said Necto had placed their license in escrow, so it was not the city's mess. It was really Necto needed to take it out of escrow, basically.
Gotcha.
And this just adds them to that list.
All right, Kathy.
I just want to mention that Councilmember Bannister and I visited Necto over the weekend. Everything was going well, and we talked to a couple of the managers. The dancing was excellent.
Why were you at Necto?
We're dancing outside.
They were outside.
Okay.
We were fulfilling our governance responsibilities.
Well, I know Jeff is always suggesting that I go to Necto at like 2 a.m, and I don't understand how anyone can do that. Not me anyway.
So is there a special dance for social distancing or?
No, they weren't.
Oh my gosh. All right. Okay.
But I would say, Ali, you may, as you follow up on how the streets opening went, the Necto was having a really loud, fun party with it was loud. You could hear it all the way.
You can social distance on that parking garage if everyone just grabs the parking space. It's an idea.
All right. Okay. I do not see any hands up, so we're gonna move on. We're at DC 7. This is motions to waive council rules, the 2/3 vote, and okay, this is all you, Anne. This is about, I guess, the council, I'm gonna describe it as best I can, Anne. The council rules say that it takes two thirds of a vote to break a rule, to bend the rule,
set aside
to bring it back. Okay, all right. Cause we've passed the time frame when you would normally revisit a decision for reconsideration. So we would have to, the two-thirds of a vote would have to waive the time limitation rule for reconsideration. And then if we do that, if two-thirds of us vote to waive that time limit, then the second piece of it is reconsidering the sidewalk special assessment rule on Nixon and Traver. This happened in May 4th, 2020. So, Anne, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to tell us about
it? Well, I know Joe Lynn and Shofu Ma and the sidewalk people that Ali and I met with and all are interested in this. So this, I was on the prevailing side with Nixon, so I was bringing it back. But this, as with all this sidewalk stuff, it's very messy. One of the glitches is on May 18, it would have only been 6 votes. If you want to bring back something at a next meeting, if you bring it back at the very next meeting, it's only 6 votes. That's Rule 19. If you try to bring it back at any future, not the next meeting, it's an 8 vote. And it's complex because the video from May 18 shows very clearly that I asked, we were having the long budget meeting, and I said, do we need to do this right now, or can I just bring it back later? And the attorney's office answered, I see no reason you have to do this tonight. So we happily postponed it because we were working on the budget. And then now I'm hearing that, oh, whoops, because we didn't vote on May 18, it's now an 8 vote threshold. So I am arguing that to anyone who will listen on city staff and council, that that's one problem, that I don't think to apply an 8 vote when I asked the pointed question on May 18 and was told I was not informed, council was not informed that it would be a tricky vote, that it would be 6 on that night and 8 in the future.
Solution?
The solution, we're going to talk about it at Rules Committee meeting next Tuesday. And again, my whole goal is to combine Barton, Nixon, and Jackson and leave the payment decisions till after the November ballot on new sidewalks. And I'm asking city staff for help with the logistics and the mechanisms to present to you all so that we can not deal with this tomorrow night during the meeting, but have it lined up in advance. And so it's a tall order. So this particular resolution,
You're unlikely to get the 8 votes. So I'm wondering whether or not you just bring a different resolution that supersedes the previous resolution. Much like when we originally passed the resolutions to consider the use of three public properties for affordable housing. And then we put that aside and we passed a new resolution to include 11 properties. You can bring back a matter not for reconsideration, but just a simple resolution that replaces the previous.
I have a question, Anne.
I think that's a great idea, Jack. Thanks. Sorry.
I have a question about timeline for the millage. So we have the millage on the ballot this November for sidewalks, and it passes. This is probably a question that's been asked and answered already, but is it anticipated then if it passes as soon as every sidewalk next spring, those will be subsidized by the millage, or does it take a while?
That was in the agenda questions, and Mr. Crawford was trying to answer that, and I believe that the millage passes in November. If it passes, then the first assessments would not start until July 2021. The millage, you know, tax revenue to come in wouldn't even start. So there's going to have to be a lot more logistics.
So if we made any effect, so the millage passes, and I see your hand up, phone number 677, I'll get to you. Hold on 1 second, Jack. So the millage passes, and we could theoretically be making assessments in March, and those people are just out. Okay, Jack, what do you want to say?
So she's correct. If the millage passes in November of 2020, the first time we would collect any money under that new millage would be in the summer taxes in July of 2021. And so that money would not be available probably until the building season of 2022. And so everything that happens between November when it passes and when we actually have the money to make available would fall under the old rules.
Ooh, okay. All right, I'm gonna unmute caller 677 so you can share with us what you have to say. I don't see anybody. Oh, thanks for letting us know. I don't see anybody. Kathy, do you see anybody?
Joe Lynn has his hand up now.
I see that.
Okay.
You are muted.
Okay, Joe Lynn, I'm gonna unmute you. Oh, you already are unmuted. Excellent. All right, Joe Lynn, what do you have to say?
Yeah, from the Nixon Road, Traver, Barton homeowners perspective, mm-hmm. this is of vital interest for us. And you know, do it, whatever it takes for us to sort of correct the current situation. I think this particular situation where we require the 8 votes is an example of where this entire process has just been fraught with problems. And I think with many of the homeowners also going through appeals right now, I think we've confirmed that almost all the homeowners for Nixon and Barton are applying appeals. I think the process would be simplified if we could just do something, whether it's through a new resolution or through the correction, to postpone these things so that we can work through these issues and be able to come to a resolution.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate what you're saying. I'm asking about timeline because we actually did have an item on the agenda where we were postponing assessments for a year, people who are already on payment assessments. So I'm trying to think of some like consistent logic to postponing it a year. And I can see it. I mean, I can see the argument.
I also want to add, I mean, a big part of where we're running into issues is somewhat related to COVID-19. I think mm-hmm. there is this aspect of the process where we're expecting people to respond in the same way that it would have taken pre-COVID-19, when you've got older generations that are not computer savvy, where all the solutions we have to deal with COVID-19 are really digital. And I think in the context of all these issues, I think if we don't make the corrections through the normal process, whether through resolution or otherwise, you're talking about a tedious process where we're all gonna be facing appeals process and all these other things. So I think if there is something that can be done, this is the best path forward, which is let's push things out, put it on the agenda for down the road. The homeowners can then not deal with appeal. You guys don't have to deal with appeal, and we can all come to a resolution.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm gonna mute you now because I see the number ending in 67 has their hand up. Is that going to be Michelle again? Here, I'm going to unmute you.
You are unmuted.
Oh, sure. Why would it cost double next year? I think Jane's got some feedback because these are real specific projects. So it's not a matter of like if, it's like we know what projects they are. So Jane, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I'll just say for Barton, the sidewalk gap is part of a larger project. And that contract was awarded and the work's begun, but not on the sidewalk. So it's not, again, for Nixon Traver. And for Nixon, though, and the future project there is the Nixon Corridor project, even when that happens. I'm certainly hoping that we address, that we do take that up. I know it's important to a lot of residents there. And the design does accommodate the conceptual plan for the roundabouts and the road re-engineering for Nixon. With Nixon, the Michelle touched on this concern about costing more later. That is in fact correct. Because the city for that project has, we're leveraging this with $250,000 of federal funds for Nixon Traver, and that is project specific. So that is at risk, that money. And if the millage, of course, doesn't pass, so, given that we will then not have that federal money, it will be more expensive, depending on whether the millage passes or not.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to move on then to DC. Jack, you didn't have your hand up, did you, Jack? You're muted, Jack.
I did not. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. Okay. I'm going to move on then to DC 8. A resolution authorizing amendment number 1 to agreement with Ann Arbor Summer Festival. I think that Jane had some questions around this one, didn't you? This is $28,000 that we would cover city costs for the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, top of the park. Everything's been canceled, but there are a number of costs that were incurred. Oh, Ali, did you ask a question about it?
I think we have a caller on hold right now that would like to speak on this.
Oh, we do. Oh, okay. Oh, yes, we do. Should we let him talk first then?
He's from my ward. Mike. He's already reached out to me, and he's
perfect.
A part of the organization.
All right. You're not – it looks like you're good. Like, can you talk to us, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to say a few things. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Mike.
Mike McLaughlin here. I'm a Ward 5 resident and the executive director of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival. And I jotted a few notes down, but I'm happy to address questions. So thanks, everyone, for your diligence. I wanted to comment on DC 8 and this amendment, which would award fiscal year 20 funds that were committed last fall, despite the original activities as described being canceled. And I guess just as a quick overview, the Summer Festival is a nearly 4-decade-old performing arts presenter. It was founded by the university and the city. Both entities continue to make an annual investment each year, and it's one of the most visible and important ways that town and gown come together. Although I'd be happy to, instead of addressing the ways the festival materially and significantly creates quality of life that we cherish in town, and delivers enormous community benefit, I wanted to address a different question, and that is certainly why is the funding needed if the activities as described are happening? And the answer is that despite the festival being funded through the Community Events Fund, it's not a one-off event. It takes year-round resources and infrastructure with a full-time team of 4 to deliver a summer season and activities. As well as programming that we are increasingly producing throughout the year. and we're asked to attribute the city grant funding to only a narrow set of on-site production expenses. Typically, this is about $500,000. We won't have most of these same expenses this year, but we have incurred significant unrecoverable costs throughout the year of planning the season. And you know, certainly the lost revenue from the cancellation at Top of the Park is greater than production expenses that are being saved by not having the event. And this certainly directly affects, threatens our work. I guess just one more thing, if I'm getting close on time, please let me know. You know, we're unique in the size and impact of our program. 200 plus individual activities or events in the summer is far greater than what you would typically get for a budget of this size, which is between $1.3 and $1.6 million, depending on the year. And a reason for that is we run a really lean operation with a careful year-round and multi-year planning process. I know that there are countless organizations, businesses, nonprofits that are hurting. And as the city examines cost-saving measures, I also realize that there are no sacred cows. I do want to clarify that providing the fiscal year 20 funding you know, that had been previously approved, we're not asking you to shield the festival from having to take its own aggressive actions. We have already made significant cuts, are being creative and prudent to preserve the organization. But as I mentioned, it helps address significant costs that were already incurred. It helps us deliver an adapted series this summer of events, which will be, I think, meaningful and plentiful. And certainly ensures us that we can come back in 2021 and be central to the community's economic and social recovery. So with that, I'm happy to address questions. I also told staff that I'm available tomorrow, and they gave me the details, but I imagine it'll be coming up pretty late in the evening. So I'm happy to help.
I have a question, and I want to thank you for joining us in this caucus so you can answer questions. You described it as a, like a partnership, like a town and gown partnership. Is U of M funding, giving you the funds that they had previously committed, how is that working? They're helping you out as well?
Yeah, I'm happy to describe that. So the funding from the university typically comes from the Office of the President. They typically fund a little bit differently than the city, and they commit to these multi-year cycles. So we're in year 4 or 5. They fund it in this current 5-year cycle. They're funding at $29,000 a year. Their funding this year has already come through. They pay in January. And so that money has already been received and is certainly being used to address programs and development and such. And then I guess that's the commitment that they view on par with the city. That's kind of the partnership commitment. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, certainly there are any number of things that happen with different individual units and schools and colleges like Michigan Medicine and sponsorship and such. But the partnership contribution comes from the president's office.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that's not a shortfall. Yeah. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions for Mike?
Mike, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
All right, excellent. Oh, Anne or Jane. Jane has a question, maybe.
Mike, thank you as well. And I did have questions about this only because, and years ago, I was one of the volunteers that raised money for the Summer Festival. And I, you know, the Summer Festival is, you know, a wonderful event and organization and, the questions this year are only a function of what we're dealing with in terms of our own revenue shortfalls and the recognition. I appreciate you recognize that many nonprofits are hurting. And we typically, as you know, the funds for Summer Festival, when you had events, person-to-person, you know, events, would pay for things like, you know, things city would typically pay for, the barricade, security, that sort of thing. And hence there were questions, you know, initially, why, because you canceled your events, but I know you're doing a lot, you're doing a different virtual, and also you have some other, like your events in the parks, and you've come up with some very creative entertainment venues for folks, and we all appreciate that. So, you know, we'd like to help you. Again, just so you understand, the questions only arose because we're trying to find savings under any, you know, rock these days. And we have staff who, you know, we're trying to avoid layoffs and furloughs and hiring freezes and pay cuts and no pay raises for staff. But some of these things are unavoidable, unfortunately, for this year. And so, again, that's the context in which we're now looking at things like this, just so you understand. But I, again, appreciate your coming tonight and answering questions and that you'll likely join us tomorrow night. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Is it all right if I say one more thing, Council Member?
Yeah, go on.
I think certainly as you look at that, I know you're pretty far along I'm sure that the fiscal year 21 budget, even though it's passed, will continue to be looked at. And certainly I can understand the hard choices you'll have to make. I think what's especially difficult here is, we made choices as well about the development of these programs throughout the year, counting on this money. And certainly I understand the mechanism is for reimbursing those funds that happen in the summer. But certainly I can understand going forward tough decisions that would be made. And it's certainly challenging that, if the event were to have happened in January, then it wouldn't be a problem. But these costs certainly incur throughout the entire year. So I look forward to joining you tomorrow. Thanks so much.
Thank you. All right. Jack, did you have your hand up for a minute there? No. Okay.
I did.
Oh, you
no,
did.
I'm just waving bye.
Oh, okay. Anne, you wanted to say something?
Well, I was just, we're going to have to vote on this tomorrow night. And so I was just looking to get more thoughts from council members on how we're going to solve this conundrum, as an isolated 28,000 cash, or are we going to try to put it in context of the other hard choices, or how are we going to
myself, I think I've heard and listened, and I understand Councilmember Plum's concerns. They were mine right away. And after listening to Mike and others, I think we have an obligation to this. I mean, this was something that was ongoing, and in good faith, I think we should honor our relationship that we were involved in and continue to be involved in. I think the Summer Festival is a huge part of our community, an enormous success. It's depressing not to have it this year. And I think it'd be really bad for us to not support them right now.
Well, and I've got a problem with the fact that, I appreciate that we're looking under every rock for money, but like $28,000 is a relatively small amount, like relative to what Ali is describing, like what a huge event it is. And I'm sympathetic to the fact that of course you make budgets based on what you're expecting to get. And so if you're asking what we think, Anne, I'm probably going to support it just because it's relatively small. And we're going to be, there are a lot of choices of like things that, well, anyway, can we move on? Okay. All right. I'm going to say, DC 9, this is a resolution directing evaluation of city pedestrian and cycling transportation environment. This is yours, Kathy. Take it away. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, I can. This goes back 18 months and maybe longer, where we talked about the need to have a professional engineer with Vision Zero expertise on our staff. I know that Council Member Wemlawi is quoted in a January 2019 MLive article making that statement. After we did not have a professional engineer hired, even though we had included that position in the budget effective July 1st, 2019, a couple months later, I decided, well, if we're not going to hire someone, why don't we just have Sam Schwartz, a consulting firm that was already working on the transportation program, have a professional engineer do a two-day assessment, evaluate our infrastructure, pedestrian and cycling infrastructure, as well as our communications and our local crosswalk coordinates. How does it all fit together? Numerous resolutions came back from then city administrator Howard Lazarus that were not consistent with what I was requesting. And we went through numerous iterations of this. It came back again in February of 2020, and I referred it to the Transportation Commission. The problem is I see the assessment being about a $5,000 project, and it kept growing to a $20,000 plus with a lot of community engagement and reports to commissions and things that had nothing to do with my initial intent, which was simply to bring in a consultant to fill the gap because we hadn't hired this professional engineer. Okay, fast forward to June of 2020, we still haven't hired that person. This resolution was referred to the Transportation Commission. The Transportation Commission discussed just voting against it, but we were informed that resolutions have to be in the affirmative. So after a short discussion, council or the Transportation Commission moved that staff perform the function rather than Sam Schwartz. So that resolution will be later in the agenda. However, this resolution was a joint effort with our city administrator, Tom Crawford, to just have Sam Schwartz come in and do what I initially asked for in the fall of 2019. Sorry, this is a long explanation, but it was an even longer process. And during this period, when we did not have this professional expertise, our pedestrian crash rate in 2019 increased by 15 crashes from 59 in 2018 to 74 in 2019, as reported to the state police.
Okay. Do we have any other comments on this agenda item?
So what's the number on the other agenda item?
CC.
The other one is from staff.
Oh, so it's DB1. DB1 is the other item on the agenda that is similar.
Thank you.
Yes, and it's somewhat confusing because even though the Transportation Commission voted unanimously to not bring in Sam Schwartz and simply to have staff do it, that's not clearly documented on Legistar.
Okay.
So my recommendation is to vote yes on the first resolution as supported by our city administrator and vote no on the second resolution.
Okay. Do we have any callers who have a comment on any of this? I'm looking, I don't see any hands. Okay. All right. I'm going to move us on to DC 10, which is the countywide road and non-motorized millage. This is 0.5 mil to fund non-motorized path construction, and we already have plans. We're going to use it for Plymouth Road, Murfin to Lower Broadway resurfacing, and Geddes Avenue, and Church to Highland and Earhart Road from 23 to Green Hills, and Miller Ave from Linda Vista to Chapin, and Washington Street Bicycle Boulevard, asphalt path resurfacing along Packard. I think we were just on that the other day, Jack. That was pretty crumbly. And sidewalk gap projects on Ellsworth, Brooks, and Stone School.
So I would point out this is a renewal of a millage mm-hmm. that we're paying currently. It's a half a mil, and it's just to encourage voters to approve it. It would provide the city with about $2 million for all of those kinds of projects that Elizabeth was listing there.
All right. Do any of our callers have any comments on this? All right. Oh, Jane, did you have your hand up?
Just what I just want to say, it's $2 million a year, right? And it's a renewal, as Jack says.
Okay.
I mean,
it was initially approved by voters in 2016.
It's
okay.
Just odd that it's got the Washington Street Bicycle Boulevard on it when we spent millions of dollars doing William Street. It's and I think the ship has sailed on Washington, even if that was a more desirable east-west bike path. Seems a little odd that's in here.
Okay. You don't think it's going to happen, you mean, Ollie?
I think the investments have been made on William Street and on First Street currently. I'm questioning whether, with all the other problems we're having with our infrastructure, if Washington Street right now, I don't know the scope of the project, but it just seems to be a little out of place right now.
Kathy?
Washington Street is a much longer street, and a bike boulevard would simply specify local traffic only. So it wouldn't remove cars, and it would not be what's on William Street, which is really a cycle track, two-way cycle track, which I don't think allows for adequate social distancing during the pandemic.
Okay.
Just aside.
Gotcha. All right, I'm going to move us forward. We're going to be running late today. Let's see. DC 11 is resolution to approve a waiver of the other post-employment benefits funding policies for fiscal year 2020 and 2021. I had to read this about five times before I understood it. This is basically, we are, my understanding of it, and I'm going to let Jane pipe in if I get it completely wrong. My understanding is that we have been cautious and careful in our funding of these kinds of commitments. And we, because we've been paying excess, we can stop paying excess and retain those funds. Rather, nope, Jack. Jack's shaking his head. All right. The way I read it was that we had this funding policy, and well, tell me then, Jack. Tell me what it means. It's a lot of, we're not putting anything at risk. We're just not funding something the way that we had a policy about.
I'm going to let Jane address this because she'll be
so much more right. Budget.
What this does is it suspends the excess payment.
Right, that's what I was trying to say. Like, we were paying more than we had to.
Well,
we're trying to make up for a deficit.
Yeah, we've got a deficit. So, and we were paying, so we always get the actuarial required city contribution that are recommended, okay? We were paying over and above these actuarially required city contributions in fiscal year 20 and 21. That is stipulated in our city policy. So this suspends those excess payments. And these temporary suspensions were identified in Mr. Crawford's financial recovery plan that we received on May 11th. With regard to this, I mean, you know, it's it's a fiscally good thing to chip away at the liability and to make these payments, and when we have the revenue to make excess payments, well, we have revenue shortfalls right now. So that's why we need to suspend these excess payments at this time, and that's what's being recommended.
All right, I'm going to move on. Is that all right?
We're still making the required contributions.
Right.
But again, this is all contemplated in the financial recovery plan. And
right.
this is one of those things that Mr. Crawford said gave him heartburn.
Yes. Gives every fiscally responsible person heartburn.
Right. Gives me heartburn. Yeah.
Because although our unfunded liability is only 14% of the pension fund, that's an incredible amount of dollars. I was trying to look for it, but it's a lot of millions of dollars. And then on top of that 14% underfunded liability, the market just took a huge hit,
right,
which is going to hit our pension investments and compound the problem. And then on top of that, we're not going to add the excess that we have been because we can't afford to. I understand, right, not being able to afford to, but it's really dangerous to deviate from this path. And
yep, it is.
What gives me confidence is that Mr. Crawford also loses people with the very same issue. You know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So no one is jumping up and down saying, gee, what a great thing, by any means. And yeah, the liability grows, the deficit grows. And so, right. And then with the risks associated with the market, yeah, on and on, as Jack just explained. So there are many reasons why, you know, in a perfect world, we wouldn't be doing this. But
okay. I do not see any hands up on this topic. So I'm going to move on to the next one, which is DC 13, DC 12. This is similar. This is about the city's pension policy. A June contribution is going to be held back that would otherwise be transferred into pension funding. Same deal, like we're still complying with the actuarial requirements, and we're deducting, we're going to be holding back the excess funding that we had been doing. It's going to, by doing this maneuver, we're going to maintain operating funds and preserve over $1 million in the general fund. So it is going to help us. Does anybody else have any comments on this? Okay, I'm going to move on then. I'm like trying to race through because I know it's like already 9:00. DC 13, this is resolution to advance healthy streets in downtown Ann Arbor to promote safe social distancing outdoors. This is about having identified streets downtown. Division, Miller, Catherine, and State, and Transit Court is elsewhere, Broadway, South Main, Miller, and Packard, for various pilot programs. There's maps online in my newsletter. There's a link to everything in my newsletter, but if you go to the agenda item, there's a map that shows where these are, and they're color-coded. Various suggestions like removing turn lanes and traffic lanes and parking lanes to better accommodate physical distancing space and strengthen non-motorized connections. And staff will report back to council in 90 days with reports on various aspects of how these pilots worked. And then in 90 days, decisions will be made about extension or removal. And there's a typo in my newsletter, extension or removal, not extension of removal. So did somebody have a comment about this one? Kathy?
I would like to see engineering drawing signed by a professional engineer before we start doing these pilot projects where we're going to find out after 90 days if anyone died or not. This is, and I'm not joking, we have already had two people die this year crossing the street. This is absurd to be painting colors on streets and saying we're going to do a pilot project. Again, 15 additional pedestrians were involved in crashes last year, more than the year before. I just don't understand why we don't have an engineer. Calling it a healthy street, it's still a very dangerous street.
So, one comment that I will make on that point, Kathy, is that I think we all remember what happened on Division with that bike lane. And I think they ended up tweaking it or adjusting it. There were complaints about driveways that people couldn't get in. It's still the same? Because I thought they were going to have to tweak it based on, oh my gosh, okay.
This is what happened. I was told that it was fine to not have much sight distance because cyclists don't go very fast uphill. Well, what about the e-cycles that go 20 miles an hour uphill and downhill and the fact that many people use Division going downhill against the traffic. We need someone who can look at it comprehensively rather than just take this idealistic approach.
So I'm going to say that I'm pretty enthusiastic in support of the downtown projects, because those are short term. It's for the pandemic. These pilot programs outside of the downtown, I'm pretty skeptical of.
Well, both of them are 90 days. I don't know if you think, Jane, what do you want to say?
Council Member Ramlawi and I sat in on the DDA meeting when this was discussed. And
Jane, this is a different one.
Yeah, okay, but this, yeah. I did ask about the streets outside the DDA, yeah.
Okay.
But this, like the other one, they are looking at this for as a pilot for potentially considering permanent reengineering changes. And so it may or may not be a temporary change.
Anne, what do you want to say?
I heard feedback from a resident today that one on the map, Sunset is our long, one of our long streets from Newport downtown is on this list to be closed. And they were questioning the logic because they said that's a major artery for folks who don't bike and walk as much, you know, from the
Sunset. I didn't see it on that.
It's on a different, it's a different resolution. It's on a different.
Okay, it's the next one. I just want to say one more thing. When the Transportation Commission discussed this, the question was raised, if we create local traffic only, are we increasing the number of police interactions with, quote, people who don't look like they belong in the neighborhood? And I'm not sure during this time we should be doing that. It was mentioned numerous times, and it's simply been ignored by staff.
I think that issue, that concern is overblown. My concern would be
different.
My concern would be you're putting cars on other roads, you know, inadvertently if you're diverting, you know, certain traffic.
That is a case also, but. We don't want, and this was raised by a African American who's in Ann Arbor, and I think it was a valid point that at least deserves some response from staff.
Is that, wait, is that what this ordinance is? This one? Holy cow, what was that? Wait, why is there so much feedback? What is happening?
We're not getting it.
Okay, I'm just getting it then. Oh, wait, now it's better.
I get your feedback.
I think it's better now. Okay. This is something different, though. This is about closure of lanes, and this is not the local traffic only part of it. This particular resolution is about lane reconfigurations. This is not...
The Broadway Bridge is included in this. Is that correct?
That's DC-14.
Okay.
Yeah. Broadway Bridge area, South Main, Swift Street, Pontiac Trail, Packard. Yeah. That's DC 14.
Okay. What are the streets for DC 13?
DC 13 is
Miller, Catherine, Division, South Main, State Street, North U, Packard.
Okay. Miller and Catherine. That is a very congested area, especially on Saturdays during the farmer's market. I'm not saying I wouldn't approve it, but I would like a professional engineer to evaluate it along with where traffic might go if it's not on Miller Catherine and exactly how the left turn traffic is going to go. We have a number of semi-trucks on that street. Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't see any hands up, so I'm going to move on to DC 14. Can we move on to DC 14?
Sure.
Okay. DC 14 is another healthy streets, and this is funding of $15,000 to pay for the process of Wait a second.
I got a hard stop at 9:15, so I apologize.
Okay.
We will only be available for 5 more minutes.
Okay. Is there something we need to talk about before you leave, Ali? Like, let's.
Well, you know, the one DC-16, I think, is the only thing that. Is it?
Does anybody have a problem with us just jumping to TC-16?
That's fine.
Let's just jump to TC-16.
There's a lot of resolutions on traffic. We have three of them at least here, three or four that will probably share a lot of the same concerns.
Yeah, let's just jump to DC-16 because I suspect a lot of people have called in to talk about DC-16. Jane and Ali, you are on ICPOC, so I think you should take the lead in talking about this. I had a lot of problems with it. I wrote extensively about them in my newsletter today. I can't even believe that we're talking about an 18-month timeline and an extra group of stakeholders. I just think this is craziness.
Well, I don't have a lot of constructive things to say, perhaps, about this resolution because we weren't involved in it. It's not being sponsored by myself or Council Member Lum, who serve as liaisons to the Police Oversight Commission. So we didn't even know about the workings of this. We weren't invited. I wasn't to any conversations leading up to this being placed on the agenda. It was put on the agenda last minute, extremely last minute. It has 9 resolve clauses in it. It calls on ICPOC in each one of those resolve clauses. ICPOC has not reviewed this. ICPOC has not weighed in on it. And the council liaisons to ICPOC were not involved in this. So as a process, I find it very troubling. I think it has marginalized council members who are responsible, who are in those meetings, who know firsthand how the commission operates, what their needs are, what their strengths, what their weaknesses are, and to be totally sidestepped and marginalized in this process is really disconcerting to me. And to be honest with you, it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful to a sitting member of city council to not be involved in something as significant as this. This is not as something as simple as declaring a month a certain as we do in June for gay pride. This is not closing a street. This is taking on what is taking on our country by storm right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be involved in this is extremely disrespectful. And I think if this is an issue that's supposed to be uniting us, it's done nothing but divide us. It's done nothing but I've spent nothing but a day and a half not thinking about how I can advance and better the climate and the situation, but how upset I am with the mayor and his leadership. And you can go into the resolution and unpack it, but yes, 18 months is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. To sit there and say, we're going to wait 18 months before we take action? Are you serious? Are you serious? It's just an insult. It's really been insulting to these last 72 hours, to be honest with you. I've been totally slapped in the face by the mayor, and I'm not happy about it.
I spent a lot of time this weekend reading the ICPOC ordinance that was passed, that it was basically a big compromise that the mayor himself drafted. And everything about this resolution is just bizarre to me because we were theoretically empowering an independent commission to define its own workload and make its own budget requests and basically captain the ship. And this resolution that has been brought that, I mean, Ali, you pointed out that you were totally disenfranchised from it. And you obviously know a lot, you and Jane know a lot more about how ICPOC operates than any of us because you go to those meetings. I'm just sort of astonished that all of a sudden that it's become like top down when the whole thing was written like to be bottom up. And
I'm sorry to speak over you, but we're talking about a commission that's supposed to be addressing systematic marginalization of voices and people. And what we have done here with this resolution is exactly that, systematically marginalized elected officials. and members of that commission. The members of that commission were not involved in this. They weren't asked whether they have the wherewithal or the interest or the tools. I've been on the commission, and we were frustrated and stymied early on because of the lack of the resources that were given to the commission to do the work that was asked to be done. Here we are dumping a whole lot of work on them. Where is the resources? Where is the resources to back this up?
Would the liaisons to the Oversight Commission be offended if we referred this to the commission to advise us on?
No. That would be the only responsible thing to do.
Jane is trying to talk. Yeah.
So I share Councilmember Ramlawi and I, and I've copied some of you on these exchanges, have been frustrated by how this was rolled out. We were not even aware of this, and we received this after midnight Friday morning, and I discovered it Friday morning, and I did respond, followed up with to the mayor and Councilmember Grand, and I had some initial questions, and I also said I would like to, because the way it was presented indicated that the mayor indicated that he didn't think that there were, that the staff had any issues in his view. And I did say, with all due respect, that's your view. I would like to hear from staff, especially Chief Cox. And so I reached out to, but there wasn't time because we had until 5 o'clock, and they had, number of these people were involved in that budget and labor committee meeting that some of us participated in on Friday. There simply wasn't time on such short notice. And when you look at this resolution, I also did request, after I received this, that that consideration be given to postponing it to July 6th. I indicated that we had an ICPOC meeting this Tuesday, and I thought it was critical to engage ICPOC, and my request was turned down. So that made my frustration that much greater. And that to me should have just been, of course, because this is. ICPOC should be the mechanism for doing a lot of these things, but they were not consulted. And when you look at some of these requests in the nine resolve clauses, asking ICPOC, for example, to review the police department's recruitment, hiring, training systems and practices to develop police department professionals. Honestly, we're not equipped to do that. We have great, great representatives who are serving on ICPOC, and but also, this big, when you see a directive like that, obviously it's critical to seek Chief Cox's engagement and input on something like this, and that has not yet been provided. I've requested that, but it's not been provided. So I did then indicate that I would like to postpone this. I would like to postpone it to refer it to ICPOC. Again, we're meeting, and I know I indicated to you, Councilmember Nelson, and maybe some others that I'd like to do that. Just made you aware of that. Postpone it to so that they can weigh in and provide their feedback and their guidance.
I appreciate Councilmember Lum. I gotta leave. I appreciate Councilmember Lum's level-headedness. Huh. But this is unfortunate. It's taking this course of action because rather than taking the time and working on it together, we're being distracted with something else. So I apologize, but I'll let other people talk.
Kathy, did you want to say something? Bear in mind that we do have a caller who has their hand up.
Yes, I want to be brutally honest. This is the second time that we have undermined the authority of our police chief, who happens to be a strong leader and who happens to be an African-American male. And I believe that whether it is the intent of the mayor or not, the optics are that this is a racist, insensitive move and needs to be voted down immediately.
All right. I just want to reiterate my position, which is that I feel like this resolution is backwards in the sense that it is really defining a lot of tasks that are by resolution supposed to be in the hands of ICPOC to decide. And I was particularly troubled by some of, Jane, you mentioned some of the tasks that have been assigned to ICPOC by this ordinance or by this resolution that are beyond what ICPOC could handle. And I think that's by design. It at the very end of the resolution, it lists a long laundry list of all the extra community stakeholders who are going to be incorporated into this process to add input and participate. And what I see is that basically dilutes the voices that were intended to be heard by the original resolution. There was a lot of argument on the nights that this resolution was negotiated, a lot of conversations, even since the new members of council were seated, about what membership is supposed to look like. We had conversations about whether an employee of the city should be a member of the commission. There were lots of conversations before we got here about whether law enforcement officers should be a part of the commission. We have opened the floodgates with this resolution by saying, now we don't care about highlighting and empowering the voices of people who are impacted by police. And it's just all kinds of wrong. I'm just troubled by so much of it. I feel like it's either foisting a job so huge onto ICPOC so they are doomed to fail, or foisting a job that is so large that the only way they can accomplish it is to be outnumbered by everybody else giving them their expertise. And so I hear what you're saying, Jane and Ali, about feeling sidelined by this resolution, but I think the bigger issue is how ICPOC and the people who were meant to be empowered by ICPOC are sidelined by this resolution. Jane, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I would also ask that we, I'm hoping, Dr. Jackson will be addressing council tomorrow night, and I'm sure she will speak to this, and so I'm hoping that whatever she has to say, that we will take her guidance and then act on this accordingly with that guidance guiding us. So I don't know what she's going to say about this, but she will also note, because this has not been this reflects no engagement of ICPOC, that Dr. Jackson, just like Councilman Ramlawi and I, do not speak for ICPOC, but she will provide helpful feedback, I'm sure, and then that hopefully will lead us to either postpone it at the very least and refer to ICPOC, or, you know, as I'm hearing tonight, some may just want to vote this down. This is a huge lift, what's being asked here, and yeah.
Well, I think it's also worth saying that I don't know that any of us are saying that the things that are listed as tasks to be done, I don't think any of us are saying that those tasks shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. But it's bizarre to me that this thing was like thrown together in a matter of days, and it has to go on an agenda right away before even going to ICPOC for a conversation. Like, I mean, it's kind of crazy.
I think that we should allow Ali to leave because he's.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to hear the two callers.
Okay. All right. Let's open that up then.
I just wanted to hear what the caller said.
Okay. I'm gonna open up for, if your number ends in 684, I'm gonna unmute you.
Yeah.
If your number ends in 684.
Yeah. Hi. This is Eric Sturgis. I just wanted to also express that I was very disappointed that ICPOC and the police chief were not consulted on their view on this. And I just wanted to let you know that I emailed Councilmember Grandin Ackerman and asked if ICPOC and the police chief were consulted, and Councilmember Grand said yes. So I find that to be very interesting. I have that in the email where she told me yes to my question about them being consulted. But either way, this should be voted down. It's a bad proposal, and I just wanted to give you guys some knowledge on I was told yes. Thank
you. Wow. All right, thanks. Okay, the next person I'm going to put on is number that ends in 556. I'm going to unmute you so you can talk to us.
Hi, this is Ralph McKee. I just have one question if one of you or more could comment on. How do you see this ideally relating to the contract, which is now the police collective bargaining agreement, which is, at least as far as I can see, kind of in limbo right now? How would you see these two processes relate to each other?
Real quick, because I'm going to leave, I think they're independent.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Bye,
Ollie. Bye.
I don't think one has anything to do with the other. And in fact, if you read this resolution, it doesn't even reference the CBA. I think it's a way of sort of not talking about the CBA.
I hear that, and that's what sort of bothers me, because to me, they would be connected.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really deal with one without the other, because you can't, with all the restrictions in the contract that relating to discipline and the like, you can't really address what happened without blending that in. You really can't do it.
Okay. All right. Kat
That's
has her hand
have.
Up. Thank you so much. All right. Kat, what do you want to say?
A few things. but I will say, I have deep concerns about this in general. And one of my main concerns too is that even if we get these resolutions, we're pushed so far by those 18 months that what year does that put us in if we decide
yes.
to adapt those?
Mm-hmm.
Change that we're talking about that needs to take place on a more urgent level. And I understand that from what I heard from the mayor tonight at his Q&A thing, that he wants it to be data driven. And I understand that, but I think this is something researched to a large and I also think there's a possibility where we can collect data and make improvements at the same time. Like, this doesn't have to be either or, and I don't think that we should pigeonhole ourselves into that decision. I wrote a long list of issues that I had with this, but I think the question that I'd have for you guys is, like, how do we push for more power, more decision making to go into the IPOC or however it's called. How do we make that happen on a level that makes sense? And how do we make that more accessible for citizens? So that would be my comment/question.
Well, one of the things that's Jack, were you going to talk?
No, you're going to.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, one of the things that's frustrating to me is that we sort of are, we're trying to move in a common direction that I think is a positive thing if more people understood it. I know that from the time he came here, Chief Cox has been meeting with all of the ward representatives, and the first meetings that Jack and I participated in were all about data. Like, mm-hmm. Chief Cox is all about trying to understand where are things happening, and once we identify what the police are doing in certain neighborhoods, do the neighborhoods actually want us there doing what we're doing there? Like, literally, he has described this multiple times to me. It's about figuring out what police work is happening and then going to that community and figuring out that if that's what they want. And I had a conversation with him over the weekend where in the last couple of weeks, I had this conversation where he offered the specific example of, like, you need this data. Like, if you find out that you have a lot of drug arrests in a neighborhood, that's a data point, that's data. But then if you go to the neighborhood and you actually present this to the neighbors and say, like, look, you've got a drug problem, and they tell you, well, yeah, we hate that you're, like, arresting all of our cousins and grandchildren and sisters and brothers, like, that's the second data point that's, like, so incredibly important. And so, like, to Kat's point, I think that the best way to empower ICPOC is to get it access to information. And I feel like we have a willing partner in Chief Cox in terms of
trying to, once ICPOC has the data that it needs to understand what the police are doing to make improvements and figure out, like, you know, I feel like everybody's moving in the right direction, but there's an obstacle. So Cox has asked, the last couple of funding requests he's asked for are directly related to collecting data. Mm-hmm. And the things that ICPOC is struggling with is their lack of access to data. Like, it's all about getting the data. So that the idea of the decisions being data-driven, that's a legitimate thing. But that's, like, we can accelerate. That's not an 18-month process, getting data. Like, that's... Jack, I hear you trying to talk.
More to the point. I'm going to try to answer the question she asked. How do we empower ICPOC? Elizabeth has actually asked the questions that really need to be asked. You know, at the time that we were considering the ordinance, we were told that there were things in the collective bargaining agreement that prevented us from fully empowering the Oversight Commission. And as this has arisen again, Elizabeth asked the city attorney to precisely identify what it is in the contract that would prevent a more powerful oversight process. And so all of that is going to be confidential, and you're not going to get to see it, but we are. We are asking those questions. She didn't hear your question in that fashion, but Elizabeth actually asked those questions, and we're working on that issue. So I want you to understand that I understand the question you're asking. She understands. She's following up on it.
I got distracted.
And, you know, but there are multiple paths that we're trying to transcend at the same time. One is to address the flaws in the oversight ordinance. One is to address the flaws in the contract that if it really does inhibit disciplining police officers, for example. And so there are multiple things going on simultaneously, and I don't think that this particular resolution addresses any of them.
Kathy?
I think that we have the wrong focus, and what I've been thinking about for the last week, and I've been to 4 protests, including one this weekend, is how do we empower our police chief? We brought in a strong leader from Boston, and he should be the one leading us through these improvements at this time. And we're doing everything but that. And again, I think that undermines his authority. And I would like to see him be our leader in improving policing in Ann Arbor. So I'm not saying we shouldn't have ICPOC, but I'm saying that the police needs to be the driver of this improvement process.
All right. I don't see any other hands raised. Should we go back to the things that, well, it's like 9:30. Is there any issue that was not talked about? There are items on the agenda that we did not talk about. But if it's 9:30 and we're all ready to go to bed, did any caller call in on one of the issues that we did not talk about or have a comment that they would like to make before we just close our meeting? How does anybody feel about that?
I'm
Jane,
ready.
You're ready? Okay. I don't see any hands up. And I apologize for as late as this meeting went, but it was a Herculean effort to get as much as done as we did.
Good job.
All right. I'm going to call.
I just want to say you are a strong leader, Elizabeth. Thank you.
She would have been done by 9 o'clock if she was a strong leader.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. Everybody have a good night. Thanks for participating.
Bye.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Kat.
See you guys.
Bye.
Come again. Bye.
I'll be here next week.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Bye. Bye, Michelle.